Lord, you people, Starship Rokan show with Anna DeVlantis, yes. Off for another day of broadcast insolence. And I cannot mm-hmm. believe, all right, this cold, when you walk outside, and yeah. I want to just be a tough guy. I want to, you know, that's me, because I'm a tough guy. I'm known as a tough guy. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
And, right. you know, incredible endurance and just, you know.
Real strong.
And very good pain threshold. It's like the president now. Very good. Here's the thing. I walked outside. I walked 2 blocks.
Right.
2 blocks.
That's all it took.
My nose fell off. It was like I was mounting Everest at that point.
I had that little I had to take the dog on a sort of a walk, the kind of walk where you just wait till they do their business and then you race back in. But that little area above my sunglasses between my hat, that little line froze mm-hmm. and started to burn and hurt in like 3 minutes. And then right below my sunglasses. I mean, it was like
my glasses froze.
Ridiculous.
I breathed, you know, like you're exhaling, yeah. and I had the little thing over my mouth, and they got steam, and then the steam froze. I've never...
Ridiculous.
I mean, that's like a... And you have to put some form of glasses on. I don't have goggles. I should probably get them. But I figure, when am I going to ever need them? This...
Tomorrow.
Maybe, because your eyeballs will freeze. We learned yesterday...
Yes.
At the end of the show
right.
that your eyeballs will freeze and pop out of your head or something like
right.
that.
Right. Just before we got off the air, we asked for an ophthalmologist to weigh in, and they literally, we had just gone to news and said, yep, you really do have to protect your eyes. You have to protect them with
against
the glasses
wind, yeah.
or the against the wind. So do that.
I found a ridiculous pair of aviators that like divas wear, you know, and how it covers mm-hmm. like 90% of my face, but right. it worked today.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good thing to have.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to have. It's part of the Kylie Jenner collection.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Just like that.
I saw that at Fire Festival. I went to there.
Yeah, you went to that? How'd that work out?
I went to the Ray-Ban booth, which actually was just a drying station. This is really crazy cold. I mean, I know, that's self-evident. But when you stop and you think, well, you know, we're Chicagoans. We can get used to it. Zero right now. When it gets back to zero mm-hmm. tomorrow afternoon, mm-hmm. we're going to be like, oh, thank God it's zero.
How warm is it going to feel like Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, people will be walking around in shorts.
Does this mean you won't complain the rest of the winter because this will remind you that this is how bad it can get?
Unless it happens again.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, what if it just is like zero or 10 degrees? Is that now worthy of complaining? And panicking.
Zero is not worthy of complaining anymore. No. Now, okay. now you know, once you're over 21, and I'm sitting last night, you know, I'm making dinner, I'm in my kitchen, and I'm watching, I got a little, you know, box with the temperature on it, you know, my little mm-hmm. Xfinity box. And so I'm watching the temperature go down. It was 1, 0. When it's zero, it looks like it's broken. And then like, -1, -2. And I'm watching it drop, like -3, -4, -5. I'm like, no! And then when it got down to -21, you're like, oh, come on. It just doesn't look right.
It doesn't. It does not. And, you know, can we just say thank you to our police, our firefighters, our transportation workers, all the people who are working and delivering and checking in on people. There are just some wonderful stories of kindness out there, too, with people knowing that there are others in their neighborhood who might need help and going and knocking on their doors in this type of brutal weather.
Absolutely.
So thank you.
Without question.
Thank you.
Garbage people out today. Streets of sand.
I didn't think they would be out there.
You know, sometimes Chicago gets a really bad rap, and this is just... a true testament of how great the people in the city really are.
Without question. I'm watching those Streets of Sand guys going down the alley today, and I'm like, oh, my God. I cannot believe that they are doing this. It's crazy. I think Benjamin Bradley is going to be joining us from the WGN TV newsroom in just a second. He's got an amazing story about an organization here in Chicago forgetting to tell one of their employees that they were closed.
One of
their sets of employees that they didn't need them today
showed up at work.
Yeah, well, kind of. It's a more interesting story than even that. Stay right close. We'll share that with you. And my garage. So I have a garage that's attached to my townhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's always
it's
a nice
inside.
Situation.
Well, kind of.
Well, for these days, it's a very nice situation.
But it was getting super cold. And there's like a hole in the door, you know, there's like a vent in the door so that in case I want to try to kill myself with my car. So you can't do that. So I had to tape that hole up last night.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a heater. There's a built-in. I didn't realize this until last night. I found this behind a bunch of other stuff. There's like a heater that's actually built in to the garage that I could actually turn on.
You really?
Yeah. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll turn it on. I've never, you know, this, if you're ever going to use it, this would be the time to use it.
This is the day. Is it like radiant heat or is it a heater?
It's a heater. It's like a space heater. Oh. It's got a fan, and it's and it you know. So I turned it on. That it had that burning smell. You know, you get when you first turn on those heaters.
Yeah.
And then you think, uh-oh, this is going to be a problem. So I sat in the garage, and then to make sure the thing didn't catch fire. And I'm like, okay, well, it seems like it's kind of working. I go up to go to bed. I'm in bed. I'm like lying there with my eyes staring at the ceiling, thinking my house is going to blow up because I've just turned on this thing. Oh. What if the pilot light goes out? Now that I've taped everything up, am I creating an air pressure problem?
Uh-huh.
And the whole thing is just going to go, you know, kaplooey? What am I going to do?
That would not. So you ran down and you disconnected it.
So I ran down and I took the tape off of the little hole. And then I thought, well, at least will keep it, you know, maybe there will be balance. And if the pilot light goes out, maybe the carbon monoxide will go out that way. I didn't know. I was like totally freaked out for the whole night. And I went down and it was like a sandy beach down there when I got down, when I opened up the garage this morning. It was like warm. It was the warmest part of the house. It was nice. It was pleasant.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about making that another outdoor space.
Another one, in addition to the deck.
A screened-in porch on an alley. I like the idea.
It'd be nice and warm. Yeah. I like it, too.
All right. Anyway, so I survived the night. I just want to let you people know that's the good news.
And did you bring the Arctic gear out, the full, you know, you were thinking of that Antarctica trip that you bought this stuff for? I bet you're glad you did.
I have.
Day like today.
I
all hooked up.
Took me 10 minutes to get out of my clothes in the office.
I still have, I think, 3 more layers or 4 more layers on.
All right, we'll check with Ben Bradley. Wait till you hear this story about these particular city employees who weren't told they didn't have to show up for work today.
Oh, my oh, boy. Gosh.
All right, but first, Kim, what's coming up in the news at the bottom of the hour? Benjamin A. Bradley is joining us right now from the WGN-TV newsroom.
Yes. Hello, Tiberius Khan.
Thank you.
Anna, nothing? What could be a good middle name for you?
Just don't say banana, because that haunted me in high school.
Hey, try growing up as Benji.
Yeah.
How about my sister? She became Little Banana, and that doesn't even rhyme with her name.
No.
That must make her very mad.
Yeah.
Does. Yeah.
Yeah.
That she didn't have an identity of her own.
Isn't it funny how, like, one nickname can totally scar a sibling relationship?
You can.
Yeah.
And then you use it all the time in just the right circumstances.
How many years younger is she than you?
2 years younger.
Oh, that's the worst. Mm-hmm. That's
rides
perfect.
At high school. Oh, yeah. It's Little Banana.
Yeah. Mm. I am not Little Banana!
It's not me. Darn it! My own identity.
I'm sure you going into a very successful career in broadcasting helped.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure she's not,
step out not of
she's
shadow.
Done very well.
Right.
Yeah. She's no longer Little Banana.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now she might become now that people have figured it out. All right, Ben. This is a very interesting story that there was a certain group of city employees today. That were called into work even though their business was closed. Can you explain?
So yesterday you had that press conference with Rahm Emanuel and other city leaders calling this cold a public health risk, pointing out that it's life-threatening and nobody should go outside unless they absolutely have to. Well, we are thankful to our police officers and firefighters and water department workers who continue to work, you know, in this extreme cold. But one group of people you would think wouldn't have to work when there's no school... crossing guards. But they reported for duty this morning.
No.
I guess the premise was, you know, there was some concern that not all kids would get the message that school was closed and, you know, would be kind of on their way wandering to school and somebody should be there to keep an eye. And early on, soon
now,
after...
Now, were the schools open?
No.
For the buildings open? No.
Mm-mm,
no,
so
if the kid actually walked over there,
facilities were open,
right?
And I guess you could argue the crossing guards would point the kids in the direction of of a place that they could go if they didn't have any other options. But yeah, these poor folks were outside this morning in that bitter cold, those wind chills down to 40, 50 degrees below zero. And the Office of Emergency Management originally,
excuse us,
cold as ice,
stood by that decision. And said that they would be back out there this afternoon at 2:30. Well, after reporters started questioning it, as well as the crossing guards union, this afternoon the city backed down and said the crossing guards do not have to stand out there this afternoon on a day, of course.
Or tomorrow, right? We're closed tomorrow, too.
Presumably. But
yeah.
Then again,
CPS
one would have presumed
closed.
They wouldn't have had to be out there this morning.
Oh, boy.
So...
Oh, my
God. That,
the city that works, my friends. The city that works. Well,
you know what? Sometimes, Ben, not always.
We're finding that out more and more every day.
You want to build a hotel? I got a hotel in Chinatown for you. Half off.
Great land.
It's got good zoning, beautiful. Though. Yeah, it's got brand new good zoning.
Comes with a free contract to rebuild the Eisenhower.
But you got to hire a couple key individuals to work on the project.
But
you will
need a lawyer, though.
Yeah. And by I got the way, a couple. Property taxes will be nothing.
Yeah.
I already got a rezone.
Yeah. And whatever. We don't want this to be a one-time killing.
Yeah.
We want this to be a long-term relationship.
Sure.
You know, now that was part, that term, Ben, is taking directly out of the legal papers that surround the Mike Madigan disclosure yesterday by the Sun-Times. And Mike Madigan might have been caught on a wire as well. And it's interesting that they're using, everyone's picked up on that part of the story, that I don't want this to be a one-time killing. I want this to be a long-term relationship. I think that the feds put that in this document very specifically to let Mr. Madigan know that they really were listening to him because he will recognize those words.
Yeah, very specific language. And let's not be fooled. The feds are very specific and very particular about what they decide to put in those affidavits and in those filings. Every word of it, as we're seeing in the Mueller investigation, right?
Absolutely.
Very specific. Nothing is accidental.
But here it's even more. I mean, you think of the wealth of information they have. 18,000 phone calls alone with Alderman Sully. Six years of what people wearing wires. They could have put anything in that. I mean, but you're right. The things they chose, very intentional.
You know, I always try to judge the depth or breadth of a case based on how high in the alphabet we go in these government filings, you know, when they're talking about individual A, individual B, individual, and I think we're on individual G.
Yeah.
So
I love her.
Are you surprised at all by a little bit of the lukewarm reaction from some elected officials about that revelation?
Nothing surprises me anymore.
I know.
And, you know, in his defense, what's J.B. Pritzker going to say, right? He's 2 weeks into a brand new job where he hopes to work with Mike Madigan. Mike Madigan, of course, you know, wanted him to be governor. He was a dream candidate because he came self-financed for the Democrats. And, you know, but we do see how quickly those things change, right?
Oh, yeah.
Look at Ed Burke. Originally, you know, those first couple of hours, even day or two, people were standing by him. There was a thought, okay, this could blow over. But then very quickly we saw him lose that chairmanship of the Finance Committee.
Well, the details start to emerge, and then people start to talk to other people.
Yes.
Because I think that it's possible that people from the law enforcement side may also indicate to people in power structures, this is a far more serious situation than people are letting on. You might want to know that.
It doesn't end there. The other interesting thing on the timing of it and why I think, for example, in the Ed Burke case, you're seeing a lot more public conversation about it by political officials is because you have its relation to the mayoral race, right? All of a sudden, you've got Susana Mendoza and Tony Preckwinkle, Bill Daley, Gary Chico, and others being forced as they're trying to campaign, to answer these questions, where I think if this had occurred at perhaps a different time of the year, you would have seen these politicians conveniently step out of the spotlight for a little bit, not make themselves available for news conferences.
But they got it.
And you wouldn't have had the momentum, right? You wouldn't have had the public momentum.
All right, Gary Chico's going to join us today, as a matter of fact, at 4:40.
Just remember that's Gary with one R.
Mm-hmm. And an E.
Or an E,
and
as
e.
opposed to the
don't confuse
G-A, two R's. Mm-hmm. Gosh.
Does he win the award for the hardiest mayoral candidate for coming out in this weather?
Yes, he does. Yeah. He does. Right. We couldn't get Dorothy Brown out here. I don't know why.
She's not on the ballot
anymore.
That's
right. She's not on the ballot. That's right. That's why we couldn't get her out here. All right. All right. Thank you very much, Ben. Appreciate
we'll see
it. We've got
today.
Kim Gordon's news coming your way in 2 minutes.
Man, it's brutal out there. It's cold. I got heat warmers on my feet, hand warmers. It's just right here.
Yes. You're willing to sacrifice our love. My love of living, yes.
You made it so far.
Dropped my headphones there. I had a little problem. Hey, Tom Skilling is joining us, brought to us by PermaSeal Basement Systems. And, Tom, I was mentioning this just a few minutes ago. It's, I believe I have a permanent eye damage, and my nose fell off from a two-block walk That took place at around 10:30 this morning.
In other words, you've gotten off lightly today.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, I'll tell you one thing. It's one way to clear the road some and have easier travel times around the city. It's amazing how traffic has dropped coming in here this afternoon.
No question.
You know, it is really scary. I was looking out over Kathy Osterman Beach up on the north end of the drive. There are people walking along these ridges of ice, which go right into the water.
Oh,
this is just insanity. You slip there, you're
it's
as
over.
Good as dead.
It's over.
You know? Yeah. I mean, nobody's going to get to you to get out of there. And you feel like saying, hey, guys, a little common sense, you know?
Right. You just saw that man fall into Lake Michigan after his dog, jump in after his
and
dog.
And at least he was going after his dog. You could understand the what was going on.
But
there.
Even he said, had the crews not arrived quickly, he said they saved his life. Right?
I know.
Gave minutes.
Just a couple of hours ago, we had somebody walk out about a half a mile in the downtown area to the break wall.
Yike.
Okay. Okay, people.
Yes.
Okay, morons. Let me explain something to you. That I know it looks like it's all solid ice out there. It is not solid ice out there. Those are moving floes.
It's true. It's absolutely true. I went out with my phone just to grab a little video of the sea smoke on the lake, the steaming. I'm telling you, literally, my flesh was frozen in about 3 minutes standing out there. It is just barbaric. And you know what? Now the next, this has been the second warmest day in our history. That from Bill Snyder and Steve
second
Kahn.
Coldest.
Second coldest. Yeah. Yes. What did I say?
Warmest.
Oh gosh.
We know that's not right.
Sorry. Yeah. We know what you meant.
Thank you, Ro. Yeah. I'll tell you, I think the brain cells have been affected by this
for sure.
Looking at all these numbers. This was the second coldest day on average since Christmas Eve 1983, which on average was our coldest day. But now we're targeting the all-time record low for Chicago, which could occur toward morning. And that is 27 below. It was set back on January 20th, 1985. A blend of all of our model forecasts puts us down around 28 below. And recent biases for it to those readings, those blends, to be about a degree and a half too low. So that would put us close to 27 below and would tie with the all-time record. So that's really rare terrain.
This lake smoke, we have the great advantage, the pleasure of being able to look out over the lake right
now.
Exactly,
yeah.
And you can actually, CLTV can actually pull up the camera from our studio here and you can look over our shoulder.
Yes.
And you see this smoke coming off of the lake.
Yes.
The steam, basically, is what
yes.
it is, right? Coming
super
off the lake.
Super cold water droplets that crystallize and become the lake snow that falls on Michigan, ultimately.
And it is so
eerie
and stunning. And if you look out over the... I know we don't have a camera for that, but there, if you look over... Maybe, I think you guys have a camera that looks back across from the Adler Planetarium or the
yes,
museum
we do.
Over there.
And I also have one out on my balcony up in Edgewater, and that's the one we use that looks out on Edgewater Beach there. And it's stunning, I mean, to see what's going on. You know, Ro, you have more years under your belt in here in Anna, I don't know, you may too, than I've been here 40 years. I've seen other cold waves. I have never seen the display of sea smoke or lake steam that this one has produced. Would you agree with that?
I would say that for sure. And I grew up near the lake. And never, as a kid, I never saw this kind of activity. As you look at the sky... right now it's pretty blue, but a little earlier you had sort of this green blue mix,
right,
in the sky, the color, the blue sky color. This is in its own way very peculiar, stunning
and eerie,
though,
isn't it?
There are images that you will never see again.
That's true.
It's almost summer sunlight in the sense that it's so clear, severe clear, but so cold, and the white of the snow and of the lake and all that is almost giving you a summer-like sun feeling.
The Chicago Tribune's staff photographers have done an amazing job at just capturing some of this.
It's amazing.
Super cool.
Well, you know what? A cold wave of this intensity has its own acoustics. It has its own optics.
Okay, we got to talk about the acoustics here because this is fascinating.
It is. You know, years ago, I had somebody went to school at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and they said they would would be standing outside their dorm, and they could hear a conversation two blocks away, like it was right next to them. The dense air, and the if you have a temperature inversion, as you often do up there, the sound waves, move below that. And the density of the air also affects that.
We should talk about... I know. Wait, Kim wants to ask a question before we do anything
sure.
else here. Like, Kim,
Tom, I was going to ask you, we were talking earlier about frost quakes. Is the Chicago area going to experience
we
this?
We could. This is where you get literally tremors. People have been reporting the popping sound in their homes and the creaking that we were talking about yesterday. That's already being reported.
That popping sound
yes.
is the rapid condensation of the wood or plastic, right? The
yes.
rapid, not condensation, but the rapid condensing
yes.
of that. When it gets cold, things shrink, as every man knows.
Yes.
And so what happens is sometimes those things rub against each other and you get this pop sound or boom sound. It sounds like something's falling.
Scary. Yeah.
It really is. You know, you're in the middle of the night and you hear this bang, you know, yeah. and you think, what in the world is going on? And it's just the cold. It's just so extreme. And you know what's equally stunning? Not just the fact we may hit the all-time low tomorrow. It's how fast we're going to get out of this. It'll snow a couple inches. We'll go one step warmer on Friday. And then another step warmer over the weekend. But by Monday, we'll probably be in the low 50s. Which means that we will have seen about an 80-degree temperature increase.
Actually, air temperature and about 120-degree wind chill difference.
That's it.
Imagine how warm that's going to feel.
Ugh. Oh, my word. There'll be a period Sunday night and Monday where even at night the temperatures don't go below freezing because we've got another storm, and this takes the northern track, pulls the warm Gulf air up into this area, and it'll rain.
You're crazy. Crazy time killing.
Bro, we can get 18 in before kickoff Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, let's do that.
Let's get it in.
Let's get it in. With the rolls, though. Right. Hey, let me just see if I understand this.
Yeah.
When are we going to have the rapid rise in temperature?
Well, the temperatures will rise slowly tomorrow night. We'll probably break above zero about 2 or 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon on the thermometer. The wind chills will go above zero around midnight tomorrow night. Not tonight, but tomorrow night. And temperatures will rise, so we could start. Might drop initially at around 5 below tomorrow evening and wind up around 10 by morning Friday. And then the daytime high will be 23. Saturday will go up to 39. Sunday, 46, and 52 on Monday.
Oh, man.
So isn't that amazing?
And think we will have a temperature swing.
I'm giddy about this.
I know. This comes with its own array of problems. Ice is going to break up on our rivers. We're going to rain on top of it. We already have ice flow situation there. So this comes with it. And initially, that ground is not going to warm up right away. So the fear is that if it rains... and you might initially on the front end of this, even though the air temps go above freezing, you might get some icing on Sunday or Saturday as the first rain showers come in. So then there could be a snow. There's another storm that comes through here. Right now, the models are forecasting rain Tuesday night, Wednesday. But I'll tell you, that could be a snow there. And then there's another moderately strong cold surge late next week. But nothing.
I don't think
it'll be quite like this. No.
But down near zero again?
Well, we're talking about daytime. Yeah, there could be single digits in that thing later.
Come on, Tom.
But then it comes back after that. By and large, we're going to be talking about 20s and low 30s.
This is just wacky. I'm sorry. People don't think that there's something bizarre going on here. I mean,
yeah.
I like to joke about the global warming just like everybody else. I enjoy it myself because it makes my...
Yeah.
I like mild winters.
Yeah.
But when you get things like this... I mean, we already have, in the Midwest, 7 people have perished from this, including a woman in Chicago.
Sad.
It is very sad.
And there's going to be more, too. And that's despite... A really admirable effort at every level of government to try and help folks. You know,
so the shelters were overflowing. They didn't. I mean, they just no questions asked.
The mayor's been there. The governor's been there.
Warming centers.
Everybody.
Absolutely.
Yep.
If you go out today, and I know most people are not going out, and I don't suggest you do, but when you're outside today, it is unlike anything. I mean, we like zero. We always talk about zero. Zero is really workable, right?
I've stood out. Perfect right now.
I have stood out at Soldier Field in zero for 4 hours, right? I'm okay with doing that.
Sure.
Right.
I've done that.
But, and then you think, well that's 20 below. What the difference going to make? 20 degrees is what it's like the difference between 50 and 70.
It is.
Or 30 and 50, right? And I was thinking, like, at one point, it was like a 32-degree differential, right? It was going to, or, you know, in terms of the wind chill. and it was 32 below, or if it's 50 below, just think about that. What's the difference between 32 and 82? That's the difference that we're talking about between zero and 50 below.
Puts it in perspective.
When can you remember that we were at 4 o'clock in the afternoon going on that, and we have a temperature of minus 15 on the thermometer, right. Wind chills 41 below right now. I mean, this is...
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
He's setting fire to the Metra tracks. Did you see all that? It was,
yeah, for the switches.
To keep the switches working. Isn't that...
That's interesting, Anna. Yeah. I don't know how else you'd do it.
The measures
well,
and
they're
taking also, right
they're,
now.
They're slowing up the whole thing, too. It's crazy. Yeah. All right. Tom,
yes.
Great work. Thank you so much for getting
Thanks,
us through
bro.
This. There's
Good.
More to come.
Yeah. We've got another day of this, and by the time we talk tomorrow, there'll be cracks in the Arctic wall here starting to show up, and welcome ones at that, although it is still going to be miserable tomorrow.
This is
the morning will be terrible.
Overnight's going to be worse than overnight last night, right?
Yeah, the wind chills won't be. The wind comes down a little bit, so tomorrow morning with that 27 below, we'll have a 35 to 45 below wind chill. We had 50 to 55 this morning. So, you know, I'm sure that'll make a big difference, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
We're living through history.
Thank you, sir.
You bet, Ro.
All right.
Thanks,
see,
Tom.
There
you
he
goes.
Bet. The great Tom Skilling right there. Who can't live without him.
No, we can't.
All right, let's check in with Kim Gordon. What's going on in the news at the top of the hour? That music means just one thing.
Yes.
Lester Holt from the NBC Nightly News is joining us as he does every week around this time.
Mm-hmm.
And 11 below.
11. Oh,
I know.
You heard Skilling. I got 11 below. First of all, 11. I'd take 11 below right now, Lester. I was out in 20 below, and the crazy thing is that 20 below is really cold. Really cold.
You guys are our top story tonight.
The cold weather. Some time here, Lester. Do you remember the 85 records that we that we've seen?
I moved there in 86, so I missed the 85 one. But I was there for some choice winters. But my goodness, this is it's about as bad as it gets.
Yeah. I've never seen so many people wear swim goggles out on the streets of Chicago before. People are trying to protect their eyes, and if you don't have the ski goggles, you see the swim goggles on people.
I had never heard this until yesterday. Our Dylan Dreyer, or one of our weather people, was in Minneapolis, and she did a story and said that if you have contact lenses, that they can actually freeze to your cornea, which is a good reason, I guess, to wear the goggles. But my goodness!
So my glasses froze. I put like one of those masky kind of things on. I wear a surgical mask, as you know, Lester. I wear
most
a surgical
days
mask
anyway.
Just to wear a surgical mask.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to get germs.
But I put one of those masky, like a wool thing over,
right.
And like a scarf. And it sort of blew my breath up into my glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got like all fogged up. I'm like, all right, well, it'll clear when I go outside. It froze. It froze instantly. It was like I needed like windshield wipers, like a whole Elton John kind of thing going on there. I mean, it was a mess.
I mean, but this thing, I mean, this thing is real, and it's moving its way east. I think our temperature here in the east is going to plummet overnight. I don't think it'll get that cold. They were talking single digits with double-digit wind chills. But and I think last I looked, I think there's been 7 deaths related to this right now. So this is
this is
tough.
No, it's real. I mean, this is I don't remember. I remember 83 and 85, and that was it was bad. But it wasn't. There's something about this that is. I don't know. It's just there's maybe the wind is higher because the wind chills. These wind chill factors are now at 55 below. And the thing is that those would have been under the old system in 83 and 85. They've reconfigured the actual mathematical equation to create wind chill factors. And those would have been in the 70s below zero back then. And I don't remember them ever being below. So.
Well, everyone here has been awing and ooing over the pictures of them lighting fire, the tracks, rail tracks on fire to keep them from freezing.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything quite like that before.
No, right. it's a remarkable thing to kind of wake up to and see them setting the Metra tracks on fire to try to help keep the switches working. It's just, it shows you. I saw a lot of traffic lights blinking on the way in, too. They're not seemingly reacting to this cold too well either.
Right, that's true. There's smoke on the water here, though. The lake, the open, the non- iced over part of the lake, because the lake had no ice on it whatsoever until about a week ago. So when you get about a mile out into the lake, mile and a half out into the lake, which is very easy to see from downtown, it was open water as of yesterday. It basically looks like the water's on fire out there.
Oh my goodness.
Because the smoke is just rising up off of it. The you know, the moisture can
steam, yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Good grief.
I know. It's wild. So as you point out, it's a big, big, big deal. You guys are gonna be doing it. It is, you know, places like, we always think about Minneapolis and think, well, mm-hmm. you know, they're used to this kind of thing. No one can get used
Can't
to these
get
numbers.
Used to it. Cannot.
No, you don't get used to it. You just get used to having to prepare for it and doing the best you can.
And kind of getting the gear that you need in order to confront this kind of cold.
Yeah, but fortunately, I think it's going to be moving. You know, it's not going to be with us forever. This is going to move on.
Very quickly. It's going to be 52 here on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, a huge 52. Percentage of the country, though, is going to be below freezing. So this is a, you know, it's not all going to be below zero, but a huge percentage right now is experiencing, you know, below freezing temperatures. So this is a rough winter. We haven't seen much snow in this part of the country yet, but it's early.
We've had some, but it hasn't been crazy. But it's certainly snow here. The problem is it's going to start raining on Saturday, which is going to create icing and ice dams, and then it's going to get warm on Sunday, and then Monday, like I said, 52 degrees on Monday. So they're looking for isolated flooding and you know, the situations like that. And as you know, ice falls from these buildings. The ice formation at the top of these buildings is significant, and that can turn deadly quickly.
Yeah, I remember when my days in Chicago, a guy I think was killed on Michigan Avenue. Yep. A kid fell off one of the stores. And
Olympia Center. He was waiting for his daughter. She was at Northwestern.
Yeah, you remember that? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good memory. Right. Now it's coming back to me too. It's so tragic.
That's crazy. Yeah. Hey, all right. So a couple other things that you guys are working on at NBC Nightly News tonight. The president has decided to take on his intelligence leaders. These are all his people. These are not Obama or Bush people. These are Trump people, including Dan Coats, former senator from Indiana, who's the director of national intelligence. Christopher Wray, his FBI director. Gina Haspel, a CIA director. What do we make of this?
Well, I mean, they all had that hearing yesterday, and they all sat there and talked about what they consider the threats against the U.S., and they concluded that, look, ISIS is not down. The president, of course, says they are. They concluded that Iran has not violated the nuclear agreement. They concluded that North Korea probably is not going to give up its nuclear weapons, basically contradicting the president at every turn. So he comes out today and says they're passive and naive. Again, he's talking about his chief intelligence people, and he, in a tweet, he was suggesting they go back to school. This is, you know, the word we get. There's deep frustration. There was some thought of a formal reaction from these folks, but they decided to, you know, maintain their silence. But you can imagine. I mean, you're in charge of these important positions, and you know, getting a sense of the threats facing the country, and your boss, the president, is essentially saying you're all wet. So it's, you know, I don't know that it's shocking anymore because we know he has taken on his intelligence apparatus before, but certainly from their end, it has to be quite disappointing.
Yeah.
Do you remember that Barack Obama said that when the day of the inauguration and he was taking over from George W. Bush, and George W. Bush, his advice to Barack Obama was keep your intelligence people very close. And do not, you know, don't tick them off because, and it was, that tried to be shared with this president because I didn't see Barack Obama necessarily as a guy who was going to tick off his intelligence services, but you never know. But this is a moment where this is just a public relations war because the president has one narrative about what's going on in the world that makes him look good, like he's in control of everything and nothing could possibly go wrong. And they're saying that it's not the way he's saying it. And now the interesting thing, and I want to just point out the context of this, Lester, because it is, because you had all of these intelligence directors that were in front of Congress, right? I mean, they were testifying. They are there because they have, the executive branch has fiduciary responsibility to report to Congress, a co-equal branch of government, about what is going on. And that's what they were there for. It wasn't like they were there to go tell a story on the president. They were there because they are compelled to be there annually.
Yeah, and it's important to point out, you know, there's so many political spats. This is not political. This is this should be folks who are, you know, on the same side. And these are not small issues. So if one or the other has it wrong, that is potentially quite troublesome, especially when you look at, you know, North Korea and what threat they may pose and what Iran may or may not be working on. But as I said, I don't know that it's shocking, but it certainly is troubling in terms of, you know, Americans' confidence in what our government knows and doesn't know. And you could, you know, a lot of folks point to overseas. I mean, how are they now to process the U.S. word or U.S. conclusions about security threats overseas? And the other thing that many people pointed out in their testimony yesterday is they didn't talk about a threat across the southern border, which the president, of course, is on the verge of declaring a national emergency. So it definitely shows a huge disparity in priorities and what each considers, you know, things the U.S. should worry about.
Can we talk about the northern border, Illinois' northern border? Right across the border in Racine County, Foxconn, this was also a big thing from the last couple of years. Foxconn, the people that make iPhone stuff in China, it's a Taiwan-based company.
Like the LCD manufacturing for the screens.
Right.
For cell phones and televisions and things like that.
It was a big deal that they were moving. It was Paul Ryan, when Speaker of the House, made a big deal about how he got this business up in Wisconsin, and it was going to be 30,000 manufacturing jobs up there. Foxconn has made a big announcement. They're making a change, right?
Yeah, they promised to create 13,000 jobs, mainly blue-collar jobs, and they were going to be manufacturing, you know, the TV screens, LCD panels, that sort of thing, and other products. But they've apparently told Reuters that they're now considering they're going to scale back significantly in terms of, you know, in terms of TV. They say we have no place in the U.S. We can't compete. That's according to what one executive told a news outlet. So, you know, they're talking maybe they'll create a technology hub there. But listen, the state had promised $4 billion in tax incentives. It's certainly a huge disappointment to the folks there and, you know, who apparently will not see the kind of growth in jobs that they had anticipated. And, you know, it's something the president had loudly proclaimed hundreds of times, you know, talked about this great deal and the jobs it would bring. So a lot of disappointment there.
Certainly seems as if the workforce there that might have been displaced with the manufacturing jobs going away wouldn't be able to necessarily slide right into jobs because the new ones they're creating seem to be more white-collar ones that require significant training. Not to say that they couldn't retrain, but it's a definite switch from how it was presented when they agreed to those tax breaks.
Yeah, and it also, I think, puts into focus, you know, the president promised a lot of things in terms of job creation, in terms of, you know, steel and these sorts of things. And this is one example of where, you know, reality kind of meets, meets the promises of, you know, these companies have to compete, and ultimately they're going to go and do what they have to do to compete as effectively and efficiently as they can.
Yep. All right, Lester, we'll see you on the NBC Nightly News tonight, 5:30.
You guys stay warm and be careful out there, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you,
Lester.
All right,
NBC 5 tonight, 5:30. At 4:30, Kim Gordon has the news from the WGN Radio Newsroom. What's happening there? Oh, we need him now, man. There is smoke on the water.
There is.
Right.
It's eerie.
That is what's happening in back of me. But a mile and a half out into the lake is on, right after the breakwater, is on steam. Fire steam. It is the most, it's like a cloud layer at the lake that is moving. And it's got to be at least 400 feet high, something like that. 40 stories.
It messes with your mind because it almost looks like steam that would be coming from something warm, but it's the reverse. All cold.
Would it be like to be in what would it be like to be in a boat out there in the middle of this moving cloud formation?
Oh.
I mean, Tom Skilling told us we're going to see all kinds of crazy things here. There's going to be tricks of the light, tricks of sound when it's this cold. And again, we have not in a generation had temperatures like this. And daytime low highs of like this at all. So you're going to have this 48-hour span where the majority of the time is spent below 10 degrees air temperature, ambient air temperature, somewhere around 50 degrees below on wind chill. And that is making your house very unhappy. And things are contracting.
Yeah.
And that's, you're hearing loud booms and cracking pops. Pops and weird. I keep hearing things that sound like they're dropping.
Yeah. And you're like, what was that? I kept feeling like someone was blowing out a tire outside. And it was these frost quakes as they're...
That was my alarm clock this morning. Some sort of weird popping. I didn't know if it was a pipe or the house cracking, but that was my alarm clock.
Yeah, so this is what
did the house shake at all? Or
I didn't feel any shaking. I just heard a loud pop. Yeah, this morning.
Me too.
There are parts of Mars. There are parts of Mars that are warmer than this.
There are.
I just want you to think about that for a second. If we could somehow find a way to breathe on Mars, we'd be just fine.
Turns out it's not as bad as we thought.
No, we'd be lighter. That'd be nice. That's a start right there. And Mars, right now, Chicagoans are thinking, I could get a timeshare on Mars. Talk about your need for timeshareexitteam.com to the guy who's selling you the timeshare for Mars. You know, I never use it. It's just, you know, when we want to take the family, just, you know, it's that, I don't know, it's 19 months to get there. It's, I don't know, then get back.
I don't know. Do we have enough time off?
Yeah, I think we're going for like 3 years. It's hard. Then you're there, and it's like, you know, the grocery stores aren't open all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to make fun of my buddy who bought earthquake insurance living in Illinois. But now we've got frostquakes going on. Maybe he gets the last
laugh.
He
might be covered. He'd have to look at that.
I'm sorry. I need to stop on that.
True story.
That moment.
True story.
So you had a friend who bought earthquake insurance here. Well, the earthquakes, you know, we are in a very seismic zone here.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like a stretch.
It did. I mean, St. Louis, more so. You would worry more down there because that's on the New Madrid Fault down there. But up here,
I mean, the guy was probably like, wait. I mean, how many people have earthquake insurance in Illinois?
Very few, I know. Yeah.
We've kind of been busted for that for a few years now, but yeah. Frostquakes.
You know, now that you brought that up, you're going to cause something here. Mm-hmm. You see what you just did? All right, that's it. I'm done talking.
He may get the last laugh.
Yeah, he might get the last.
Yeah, right.
Right. Well, Kevin! Kevin!
I hope he doesn't need it.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. That goes for all of us.
Collaborate and listen. I sit back with my brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly. Flow like a harpoon daily and nightly.
Will it ever stop?
Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights and I'll glow. To the extreme, I'll rock a mic. Like
all right, kids. It's the Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. The Wheel of Candidates continues. There are 200 candidates for mayor of the city of Chicago. But it turns out
the other
now,
direction, actually. It's getting smaller.
Well, let's hope it gets smaller. Because right now, there seem to be five that are in good competition with each other.
Yeah.
And Gary Chico is one of them, and he is with us right now. And thank you very much for being here. We appreciate your time, sir.
Good to be with both of you. Mm-hmm. I don't see a fireplace in here.
We need one. You didn't bring one with you?
We need one.
Yes, that is for sure. All right, so let me just start with the news of the day here, because this is becoming the, you know, it was born as a little monkey, and now it's a gigantic gorilla that has just entered into the room here in terms of the investigation into Ed Burke, and now it looks like Mike Madigan actually was a part of this over here. And this, to me, seems like a seismic change, not since the end of we were just talking about the Untouchables movie, not since the end of the Big Bill Thompson era in the history of Chicago, have you had a moment as consequential as the potential for a clean out in City Hall. You know, there are rumors that there may be double-digit numbers of aldermen that are targets of this investigation, and how high does it actually go? If you were to be mayor of Chicago, how does that role fit in with what's happening here?
Oh, I think Patty Baller once said Chicago ain't ready for reform. It's ready for reform now, and we need it. I've proposed several things that I think go right to the heart of the matter. No more aldermanic prerogative of one person deciding what happens from things as small as a liquor license to as big as Lincoln Yards. That's out. We have to take that power away from just one person. Secondly, no outside income. You work for the city, that's it. That's your income.
Would you raise the salary?
It's already $120,000. How high do we want to go? $120,000 is pretty good money.
These guys can't make it out of
$120,000. But you're saying no other job. Like
no
they want to be a part-time
job.
Teacher, not allowed,
no
nothing.
No other job. $120,000. And term limits. Two terms, three terms. I'm open to that discussion. But now, do I expect these to be approved by the city council? No.
No.
So what do we do, Ro? We don't sit here and wring our thumbs. We've proposed one major change, and that is to take all three of those changes to the citizens to vote on in a binding referendum.
Ooh.
You want to take, let's take it to the ultimate bosses, the people, and they'll impose that change. I don't expect this to come out of the council. I don't expect the alderman to say, here you go, take all my power. It's not, it's against human nature. And in order to accomplish these things, we ought to put it on the ballot and have the citizens of this city vote it up or down.
In terms of Rahm Emanuel, would, if you had to give, put one knock against the way what he's done, what would you say it is in terms of what you'd do differently?
Well, I think we're just different people. I mean, I think Rahm Emanuel did a number of things well. I think he lured a lot of businesses into this city. I really like the program with the community colleges of giving everybody who attains at least a B in the CPS free college tuition. So, I mean, I think this is, people in Chicago, they don't want to look back and complain. They want somebody who's going to be a leader who steps up to say, look, this is my vision. This is what we're going to do. And also has the maturity that when the previous mayor did something right, you build upon it. And when there have been gaps and things we haven't done well, we step up and
fill
those.
What is one of those gaps, though? Would you say?
I think we could have better relations with our teachers. I mean, I had great relationships with the teachers when I was chairman of the Chicago School Board. I don't think parents want all the drama of knowing that the teachers are going to go on strike, the schools are going to close. I want to work doubly hard on making sure that that relationship gets back to where it needs to be.
But the relationship sours over money. Generally, like I've learned that has happened before in other areas of the world.
Speaking
but,
for other people,
yes, but that's what it does. It comes down to that, and the question is how and you're uniquely qualified to answer this, right? Mm-hmm. As former chairman, mm-hmm. What do we do about the budgets here? And obviously, education is very important. Public education is very important. It's gigantic. This is a gigantic school district, right?
Yes.
And it's got some of the best schools in the country. I think that I cannot say that enough or loud enough, mm-hmm. that the Chicago public schools have, there are high schools and there are grade schools that rank amongst the top in the United States of America. Correct. And then you have some schools that are not performing as well. And some that are, they're not the worst, actually, as it turns mm-hmm. out. But they need to perform better.
Yes.
So, having said that, how do we pay for this party?
Well, we've done it before. When I went to the school board in 1995, we had an enormous deficit. We solved that in a matter of 2 years. It was a $1.3 billion expected deficit.
How'd you solve it?
Cuts, revenue raise, and efficiencies.
So cuts, I mean, the teachers union is not going to love the idea of cuts.
Well, I didn't say cut teachers. There's a lot of other places to cut. We have to look at what we're spending on insurance. We have to look at what we're spending on technology. What are our staff? I mean, I think we have to reorient our staffing levels. For example, I want to focus on psychologists, social workers, and special ed personnel. I don't want to have any other fluff. We have to really be careful about that. We got to look carefully at our food, our transportation budgets, and see where we can lean it up. Secondly, we do have to have some new money. I think there is an enormous amount of room to go back to Springfield. Now that J.B. Pritzker is there, we have somebody who doesn't believe that we're bailing out Chicago, who will actually look at it as an investment. They did not pick up all of the pension obligation that the city schools pick up for the teachers the way they do every other district in Illinois.
Right.
That's just for starters.
Well, that was specifically designed that way initially, right? I mean, there was logic behind the initial design of that.
Well, the point of the matter is that we're here now, and we should be treated like every other district. Also, let's face it, we've lost 80,000 students over the last 15 years or so. That 80,000 students that have been lost have cost us $500 million. And if we don't start to recruit our students back, and that goes to what you said earlier, Ro, making our schools more attractive.
Well, and I think we should talk about this, too, which is a very interesting dynamic is happening in Chicago. And we're going to see it in the 2020 census. We've already seen it in all these preliminary numbers. Chicago is getting smaller. Mm-hmm. But true. Chicago is getting smaller, and it's getting, and the average income and wealth of Chicagoans is going up. And yes. it is the education level of the average Chicagoan is going up. We are attracting young urban professionals, to yes. go back to the 1980s, if you will. and we, literally the people, the, you know, the working class folks in Chicago are leaving. Because they either they can't afford the taxes, that there's crime in neighborhoods that have become untenable for them. But it's an interesting dynamic here. Let's talk about the attracting of business, because as you mentioned, Rahm Emanuel, I think, has done, I agree with you, done a great job with that. And if you look at Chicago City skyline, this is the most monumental change in the Chicago City skyline as than it has been since the 1920s.
Totally agree.
Since
the skyline. All the cranes up. It's
totally agree.
So nice it's great on a lot of levels, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, those are all positive things. Mm-hmm. What do you do to keep that momentum going?
Well, first of all, you keep Chicago affordable. You talked about people leaving the city. I don't know if you've seen my commercials, but I've based a large part of my campaign on affordability in Chicago. The working class families in this city can't take another brick on the back. We can't take Mendoza's taxes, and we can't take Breckwinkle's taxes. That's what they do. And one more brick on the back of these people, you'll really see an exodus in this city. Now, what do we do to make ourselves more attractive? Number one, we finished the project we started with the schools years ago. We need an even balance of excellence an opportunity all throughout the city, not just in five places, six places, all four corners of the city. When you do that, people will come. What am I talking about? Lakeview High School. People that live in Lakeview don't go to Lakeview High School, okay? There are people that want to go to selective enrollment schools. Mm-hmm. They apply. They have a 1 in 10 chance. They can't get in. What do? They either leave because they don't want to pay double tax in Chicago.
Right.
They don't want to pay a tax for tuition and the property tax. We have got to get our act together here quickly to keep this city attractive to families, or we'll keep bleeding population.
But there has to be, so no new taxes? I mean, I agree with you that it's crushing on a lot of people and making them rethink about what they can afford about staying in this city. But what are you wouldn't tax them?
Well, we owe it to the citizens of this city not to hit that button first, which is what we've been doing. Casino in Chicago. Chicago owns it. We have a wonderful operator, and we regulate it by the Illinois Gaming Board, maybe $300 million a year. These buildings that are surrounding us right now, these commercial office buildings, are getting an enormous break. They're underassessed. 300 North LaSalle, sold for $850 million, was assessed at $395. That's the reason Barrios isn't here anymore. That costs us a tremendous amount of money.
Okay, you brought this up, so let's go there. The assessment system, property tax. I mean, let's just go to the Sun-Times story yesterday about Mike Madigan, right? And this Chinese national businessman coming in wanting to build a hotel, and the whole idea was about getting the property taxes reassessed for this lot that he wanted to, and the zoning changes, right? That's the game that has been played. You've been in this town your whole life, Gary. Mm-hmm. Tell me right now, Mr. Chico, how do we get around the endemic corruption that surrounds the tax laws? That's the big Megillah. That's basically the fentanyl, if you will, of the Chicago corruption issue.
Fentanyl. Let me think. Oh, anyway, what you're going to do, first of all, is you start with a new assessor. You got Fritz Kade,
who
seems to have the right moral compass about what to do. Secondly, I'm not telling you that when I accurately assess these office buildings that there's not going to be a property tax appeal system. There will be. But it all starts at the top with the leadership of the assessor's office. This man is different. I think he's going to do things differently. And remember, under the Constitution, we can't take away property tax owners' right to appeal. We just need to make sure that it's on the square. And I think we're going to see that happen.
A fairer system. But you don't think that will impact businesses that want to build these buildings and want to have their headquarters in the city?
We're talking about a fairly marginal impact to individual companies that make up these buildings. And I'd rather have the burden be on me, one of those companies right now, put it on me, rather than the senior citizen who's on a fixed income who can't afford $300 or $400 a year more because these buildings got a break. We have to be smart about this.
Right, because the buildings can't move. That's the one thing that is true about them.
Well, they can go vacant.
And they're seeing some of that. Plus, if you want to bring new headquarters downtown, they want to build their own building in some cases.
I submit to you that no major company or even mid-sized company will not want to come here because we have a fair assessment system. It may raise the cost a little bit, but not nearly enough to deter somebody from coming here. And by the way, we're in a market clash with New York and Los Angeles. They are far more expensive than we are on the whole.
That's true, but they also I believe that there are a lot of businesses. I don't think this was the determining factor for Amazon, but I do think that this is
in everybody's
calculus about Chicago, which is that they figure there's a corruption tax in Chicago, that there's a certain amount, there's a price of doing business. You have to know the right people, you have to hire the right lawyers, you have to have the right organizations that are going to be backing you in this, because this is still a little bit of that Capone mentality of everybody's on the take in this town. Do you think, I ask you this now, do you think that the news, the revelation of this Operation Whopper, as we are calling it.
Whopper.
Like
Whopper.
Burger King.
It all started
Whopper.
With Burger King. That this.
That's what we have until the feds come up with one.
Right, exactly. And we've submitted to the feds. We hope we win the contest. Do you think that this will change that perception? Because I think I think this is going to be a 5-year story in Chicago, and mm-hmm. we'll have a 25-year throw.
It's up to us to make a change. Well, it's not going to happen by itself.
What are you going to do to make a change if you're mayor of Chicago, Gary Cheek?
Three proposals: end aldermanic prerogative, no outside income as an alderman, and term limits, both on the mayor and the alderman. You're not going to see a 20-year mayor here anymore. It's not going to happen. I don't think it's in the DNA. We talked about millennials a while ago wanting to come here. I saw a very disturbing report in the last 48 hours that a third of them also want to leave. We had better get attuned to what the people of this city want to see mm-hmm. in order to keep them. And one of the issues is just what you said, corruption. People want that cleaned up. We have to clean it up. Crime, education, and affordability. They all go together.
We haven't mentioned this, and obviously this is a big one, too. This is number two on the hit parade for most of the polling. In terms of crime, what would you do? What changes would you make with the Chicago Police Department?
Mm-hmm. I've already called for a change in leadership. I believe it starts at the top. We have to model behavior. We are way down in the detective ranks of this department. We are not solving homicides. We solve 17% of them. Los Angeles and New York solve 80%+.
Would you go external for leadership in the Chicago Police Department, or stay inside?
We may. We won't limit the search just to Chicago. I think we have an enormous amount of talent here, right here in our Chicago Police Department. And let me say this to you. We have the vast majority of Chicago police officers are fine people and do a great job. We just saw in the last 2 months examples of three heroes who died protecting us.
Yeah. How about
we have to start with that and remember that. But I've called for the removal of Johnson. Why? I think we're down in the detective ranks. Community policing, which was a great bedrock of establishing relations between the community and police, has gone away. Guns are proliferating over the borders from Indiana and Wisconsin into our city. I don't see any major initiatives coming out of the department to do anything about this.
Is that the police department's issue, or is that a legislative issue?
It's both. But I mean, if I were the police chief, I expect you to be clamoring.
Want to build a wall? How about a wall on the skyway?
I think now
I got something here.
Right.
It's going to cost $40
whatever
to go across this, to go across the skyway.
We may have a gun detector, because I'll tell you what's happening. Wall. People are going over the border, buying guns, coming right back. You can't have this free flow of guns. I'm not talking about taking somebody's conceal and carry away. I'm talking about illegal guns. Somebody, straw purchasers, go over, pick them up, hand them out to four gangbangers. They're on our streets. We need better cooperation, or we'll have to consider a federal lawsuit against our neighbors.
So you would consider that?
Yeah.
What is your website?
ChicoFromAir.com.
ChicoFromAir.com. All right. Every time I hear these websites, they are so easy. I wish I had squatted on all of them. I don't know
why. Would that have been a good business for you early on?
I know. Why didn't I think of that?
Darn it.
All right. Good luck out there.
Thank you very much, Anna.
Nice to see you,
Chico. Let's now check in with Kim Gordon. What's coming up with the news at the top of the hour? Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right.
Yes.
Richard Roper has just stepped into the studio with us.
He made it in. He's a hearty Chicagoan.
Absolutely. I'm so disappointed that Hamilton has been canceled. I thought that would be the one thing that would continue on, but no Hamilton tonight.
Right.
They're going to miss their shot?
Yes, exactly. Well, I think
Hamilton would not
Burr
like that.
Kills Hamilton again. Spoiler alert.
Oh! Disney on Ice also canceled.
Come on!
See, that doesn't make sense.
Well.
But somehow DePaul still wants to go get creamed by Villanova.
Jeez.
Now, why is it, if I were to poll, isn't this a perfect time
perfect.
To go, oh, you know what? We
yeah,
can't
you know,
do it tonight.
We got it. We, it's cold. True.
We
it's
got
very
that thing.
Cold.
Hey, they're improved this year, Ro. Don't sleep on DePaul.
No, that is true. DePaul is improved this year. And growing up as a Blue Demon fan, I appreciate the fact that they're better, but they are still going to be creamed by Villanova.
Yeah, if you want to see a winner, maybe go see Loyola up at Rogers Park. They're also playing tonight.
Well, see, now that's crazy. Do you know how cold it is up at the Gentile Center tonight?
They're that's handing out winter hats to the first 500 people that show up, though, Ro. So you got that going for you. If you decide to brave the weather,
if you don't have one by now.
If you show up without one hoping to get one of those, that's a problem.
Hey, kudos, too, to the Loyola Student newspaper. Their headline today was cold as F with a Fahrenheit, F, which is very clever. Whoever wrote that headline, front page headline for the Loyola Student newspaper today.
Very good.
Cold as F.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Up there. Right. That's got to be, that may be the coldest, the coldest part of the Midwest right now.
There's something about that area.
The Loyola campus.
Yeah.
Off the lake. There's some kind of wind thing going on there.
And that's where Skilling took that video today. The Edgewater video?
Yeah.
It's like right there. All the steam.
Yes. It's the steam, and it's always cold there. There's no, I mean, it's cold until July 4th there, and then it gets cold again on August 20th.
That's so true.
It's sort of like, it's a pretty crazy part of the world. And I think that you gotta be hearty folk. And I said folk. All right, do this.
Nicely
let's
done.
Do it.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
Oh. All right. Now, for those of you who watch The Circus, and if you don't, you should. If you don't have Showtime, you should get it just for this show alone. Shameless, pretty damn good, too.
It's awesome.
But The Circus is amazing because it is this combination of Republicans and Democrats who got together to make this insider docuseries, live docu, 1 week at a time docuseries where everything you're watching happens in that week.
Yeah.
So last week,
what
it premiered
week.
Again, you know, for the fourth season. It was at, you know, post, it was the end of the shutdown. And it was amazing to watch this whole thing happen in real time. They basically, if you want to avoid all the news and not care about anything, you just watch that at the end of the week on a Sunday, and it's a perfect 30-minute digest. Mm. What they did, though, is they went back to season one, and to me, one of the pieces of evidence that is undoubtedly being used by the Mueller investigation is an interview that John Heilemann, who is one of the reporters on the Circus, sat down at the Russian Tea Room with Roger Stone, and they were drinking.
Roger Stone, I think you could say, was under the influence at some point there.
This was late September, early October of 2016, and Roger Stone famously said, hey, it's not over till we say it's over. And he talked about having a mutual friend with Julian Assange and knowing about the WikiLeaks. He bragged about all of that on camera. And when it ran, I distinctly remember talking to Mark McKinnon, another one of the reporters, a Republican political operative for many, many, many years, who is very fair-minded about this. I think he's an amazing reporter now. I said to him, this is evidence of a crime. And he goes, well, we'll just have to see what happens here. And now, 2.25 years later, we're sitting here, and they took Roger Stone's associate, Sam Nunberg. He was the guy that got drunk on CNN. Remember him? It was Manafort and Stone, and then Nunberg worked with Stone after Manafort left. I mean, it was like he was just as much a part of this, although he's been interviewed a number of times now by the federal government, and he appears to be a witness now, not a subject or a target of this investigation. And so he sits down at the Russian Tea Room at the exact same table and talks to John Heilemann about what he knows.
Do you think the president and his people need to be careful
in terms of how they treat Roger publicly now.
You really want to be self-destructive and end up in a deep hole, turn on Roger and see what happens. From the questions I got and the way things have played out subsequently, this is not looking good. And I don't care what is said from 8 to 11 p.m. on Fox News.
Right, right, right.
This is bad.
If Roger were to totally go, would turn on Trump and just say, that's it.
I think that'd be one. I do think it'd be one of the final pieces for Trump to be removed from office.
That's Sam Nunberg.
Wow.
That's a guy who was willing, another one of the guys who was willing to take a bullet for Donald Trump. That is a crazy, crazy, crazy moment. But he's saying something very important. Remember, also on the circus, we learned from Donny Deutsch, no less a figure of New York social than Donny Deutsch. You know, remember him from CNBC.
Sure,
he had a big
absolutely.
Advertising agency.
He had his own show, too, for a little while. Mm-hmm.
He said, this is before Michael Cohen turned, he said of Donald Trump, you better be nice to Michael Cohen. He can hurt you. Mm. And Michael Cohen, and that also came up, right? I mean, that turned out to be true. If Donald Trump turns on Roger Stone or doesn't pardon him, it's going to be very ugly. Oof. So here's what Roger Stone, in his own defense, did. He sat down with Alex Jones from InfoWars and said,
"This isn't about me, Alex. It's about the president. Yeah. They're coming for it, and they want to silence me because I see the big picture. I lived in 1974. I worked for Richard Nixon. I saw that takedown. It was very, very similar. President, wake up. This is a speeding bullet heading for his head."
Wow. Yeah.
Where's Alex's format these days? His forum? Is it just the telephone? Because he's been banned from almost everything, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. And by the way, if you want to get some energy drinks, I've got the great stuff right here. Get that power of drink going. Here's the number.
I like when Alex Jones is selling us this thing to reverse the... because frog testicles are getting smaller and in the water supply. And this drug reverses that so that it's taking the manliness out of men.
Oh,
you
no.
want to be a man again? It's the same. It's exact same issues that the frogs are having. Man's having man. So if you take these pills, it takes it right out of the water. Put it right in your water. Take it right out of the water supply. And your testicles will grow. And there's people out there that are dumb enough to buy it.
Buy two, get one free.
Fantastic. Oh, man. Anyway.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
All of it.
But Roger Stone is basically saying to the president, you know, watch me.
Number four.
Okay. It is crazy cold outside. And many different experts give many opinions on how to keep your house from your pipes bursting or it making a weird noise.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, all of a sudden, your house is talking back to you.
Yeah.
Your house is basically going, hey, what the hell?
Yeah.
The frost quakes we talked to Tom Skilling about.
Right.
Yeah.
So no less an authority than Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It, said that if you want to keep your pipes from busting, you have to...
Don't turn the main water off on your house. I've heard that tip. Like, oh, just turn the main water off, because then if a pipe breaks, then, you know, it won't force more water into the home. I've heard that on some of the other outlets. Here's the thing. We need the trickling of the water. Moving water doesn't freeze. And the tips that I've given is hot and cold water, not just they're two separate systems. And so you have to put them on. This is crazy cold weather. Our houses are not designed for any of this. Your heating and cooling system is not designed for this. It will not keep up.
Okay. That's on the Channel 9 Morning News, the WGN Morning News.
Was he at a club? What was in the background there?
Well, you know, they always have to have something going on that show.
Right. That's true.
Sometimes you just see Hoover dancing in back of him while he's talking. You just never understand exactly what's going on.
Or
Bozo walks past, like in an Alfred Hitchcock cameo. It's weird.
Or someone's yelling at Skilling.
Yeah. There's something very strange that goes on that show. Anyway, the point is this. That he says, too, this is very important, don't overheat your house.
The other thing that I've heard people say, oh, turn the thermostat up like 2-3 degrees so you overheat the house. Forget about it. Put it at 68, 70 degrees, whatever it is. Now try and help the system that you have. If you have furniture that's over a vent, move that out of the way so it can get the air into the home. If you have radiators and you've got furniture jammed up against a radiator, it's not allowing it to breathe, and that's why it's not working hard. I cannot stress enough the need to run some ceiling fans or a box fan in a corner of the room you're going to spend most of your time. Blow it against the wall so we get some air to circulate.
Yeah, like that's convection
good,
oven.
That's good advice.
Good stuff. Or a Saints fan. They're still overheated, you know.
Oh, we're coming. We're getting to that. We're getting to that.
I won't even give him a rim shot for that because I'm still mad.
I'm kind of mad for them, too.
Yeah.
Lou also said on the John Williams show that lighting a fire in the fireplace is the worst thing that you can do to heat your house right now.
Why?
Because it's burning all of the warm air. It needs the warm air for combustion. So all the warm air that you put in your house already, it's just eating that up.
Yeah.
And it's
he's right about that.
That makes sense.
I'm still doing it. But
I am too.
Because it's just more fun.
Sorry, Lou.
Yeah. But
he did say it's okay if you want to cuddle up with somebody.
No.
You know, I don't know. But I don't think that was scientific.
Ask first. So.
Do we have to call Lou first? To
yeah, and that's we have to call with Lou. That's the only way that actually works.
Fine.
It's weird.
That's
all right, we'll get to your three, your two, and your one. But first, let us now check. Kim Gordon, what's happening at the bottom of the hour? We continue on here with the top five. We have worked our way up to
number three.
Andy King is using his internet fame as an opportunity to do some good. King, who is one of the events producers in the Fire Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That festival.
Oh, yeah.
Made America's jaw drop in the Netflix documentary, Fire, the Greatest Party That Never Happened, when he reluctantly told the film crew about the time that Billy McFarland, the founder of the Fire Festival, right?
Isn't he in prison?
Serving a 6-year sentence, yes.
Right. Asked him to do the impossible.
Billy called and said, Andy, we need you to take one big thing for the team. I said, well, you're our wonderful gay leader. You will go down and Cunningham's, who's the head of customs, and get him to clear all of the containers with water, you will save this festival. I drank some mouthwash, and I got to his office fully prepared to his.
Oh.
Huh?
Yeah. Spoiler alert to you. Back to out at the last second.
Fortunately for King, he didn't need to do whatever that was, whatever beep his beep.
Yes.
Yeah. But the film has taken off now, and King became a viral sensation, spawning thousands of hilarious memes. And now Mr. King is completely confounded by his fame.
I'm blown away with the response of the documentary. Completely blown away. I'm now a noun, a verb, an adjective. It's mind-boggling. After doing a documentary like this and you have your 15 minutes of fame, what happens next? One of our biggest goals, obviously, is paying back everybody in the Bahamas. If I can drive positive influences and a lot of positive energy towards, you know, social environmental impact, which is what I base my business on, then I think I can utilize this moment,
Kevin,
to do a lot of good.
Kevin, do you see why I'm sickened by the millennials?
He's not a millennial.
But he thinks he is.
He's part of that whole thing.
He's catering to them.
Right,
so he's catering.
We count him as one.
Done anything negative, you get coupled up with the millennials.
But do you see what's going on there?
Damn,
I just like to talk about social impact right now, and I can't believe how famous I am because I was willing to blank a guy's blank.
Guy's a team player, if you ask me.
In order to get the water.
Well, I am just blown away. Blown away.
You're just an idiot.
How could that story get worse?
Yeah, just,
the Fire Festival story.
This is a timely tip for every single person who's featured in the documentary. You don't come across well. None of you do.
No.
But, except for the Bahama Day laborers who got ripped off. The island workers that he's talking about somehow helping, but he didn't really explain how.
Checking in at
number two.
Roger Goodell provided an update on the state of the league ahead of Super Bowl EEE, which is coming up Sunday in Atlanta. Ooh. The controversial no call in the NFC Championship game.
Yep.
We understand the frustration of the fans. I've talked to Coach Payton, the team, the players. We understand the frustration that they feel right now, and we certainly want to address that. So whenever an officiating is part of any kind of discussion post-game, it's never a good outcome for us.
No.
We know that. Our clubs know that.
Oh,
our officials know that.
Shut up,
but we also know our officials are human.
I can only imagine how Bears fans would react to something like that.
Shut up!
Just maybe even like that.
You think Saints fans are asking Andy King to visit Roger Goodell's office to overturn?
I would rather have Andy King as commissioner of the NFL, because he would have to go to New Orleans and blank every Saints fan's blank in order to get over this.
They said they never considered overturning. At the executive level.
Get to Goodell's office and have him overrule the ruling.
Right.
Andy King, get
Andy
there.
King, you're going to have to go blank. Roger Goodell's blank.
Oh, we got you a flight to New York.
Yeah. Are you ready?
I'm fully prepared.
Yeah.
I was fully prepared to go. I was swilling Lavoris.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
You know, if that's what you need to get the necessary water supply to your festival, you may be in trouble.
That might be the tip-off.
I don't think that's ever happened with Lollapalooza, ever. You know?
Right, that's the tip-off to the rip-off.
Yes, Tim Berners would see that right away.
Yeah. Here's what we need you to do, Andy.
You're going to save the festival. And when you're done with that, we need some bands.
Food.
Yeah, food.
And
transportation.
Like,
and we have FEMA tents right now for all the millennials.
So if you could go to the... If you could go to the offices of Blink 182.
Oh my gosh.
And blank blinks blank.
Oh my God.
Number one.
Oh my.
Oh. Oh, this is sad. Wait a second. This is sad.
That's a tough
turn.
I
want a moment.
Two-time Grammy winner James Ingram has died.
But I guess my best wasn't good enough. 'Cause here we are back where we were before.
James Ingram was only 66. Wow. He was announced on Twitter by Debbie Allen. Remember her?
Yeah.
From Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And Ingram joined a band called Revelation Funk. And then tried to make it in L.A. He talked about this in 1989 to, of all people, Byron Allen.
Did you guys have a record deal?
No. That's a local group.
Oh, it's a local?
That's the one I'm way out here to L.A.
Where are you from originally?
Akron, Ohio.
Oh, Akron. Yeah, they make a few tires there.
Yeah, but they used to. Yeah, used to be the rubber capital of the world, but now they're cheaper labor conditions, you know.
Okay, the whole deal, huh?
Right.
Now, things really started to take off for you when you hooked up with Quincy Jones, right?
Right.
Yeah, how'd that come about?
By way of a publishing company called ATV, singing demos, $50 a song, and they got Just Once to Quincy, peddling him the song.
Just Once?
Right. And he said, who was this singing? So he gave me a call, and here I am.
Wow. I absolutely adore James Ingram. He was one of the great voices in the 1980s. And of course, and I'm sorry that we had to play that, is that there's very little biotape of James Ingram, except for the Byron Allen interview. Yeah. And Byron Allen, of course, comes to every interview very well prepared.
Yeah.
Like, where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what?
Kind of the Larry King. So why are you here?
Right, and you are, and you're with. Anyway, James Ingram was 66.
The top five at five.
We're having it. I think I'm having it. There we go.
It's all fired up now.
My fault. Operator error.
Oh. Well, it's cold.
You don't want to be on a flight with me as the pilot.
No.
Even your control board, vast board with all its lights and whistles.
Right.
It's a little sluggish in this weather.
It's unclear. This button over here.
It's unclear how that button. I know how that button turned off now. All right. Hey, this is not the issue.
No.
This is not the issue. Richard Roper is in the studio with us. And Richard Roper sat down with none other than Richard Dreyfuss. Richard Dreyfuss, one of the great actors of the modern era, the film era, right? Came to everybody's attention. I was originally, right, in American Graffiti.
That was his first major role. People might remember if you watch The Graduate, he famously has like two lines in The Graduate where he plays one of the students when Dustin Hoffman's character is getting in some trouble, and he goes, "Want me to call the cops? I'll call the cops." That's the Richard Dreyfuss. But American Graffiti was his first big role, and George Lucas is the one who told him about, told Steven Spielberg, "Hey, this kid that was in American Graffiti might be good for Jaws, that shark movie you're talking about."
Wow!
And he steals the movie from the shark and from Roy Scheider. I mean, it's hard to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. Yeah, playing the oceanographer, Matt Hooper. Because I think he's, if you go back and look at Jaws, Roy Scheider's the police chief, and Robert Jaws, of course, the legendary, fisherman.
Right.
But we feel like we could all identify with Matt, the Hooper, the guy that, is the, very excited because he's an oceanographer, but also like, what are we nuts? What are we doing now? We're going after it? you know,
a sensible
right.
one.
Right.
And what a career, you know, when you think about Richard Dreyfuss, because then after that, this is all, they were in their 20s when they were making these movies. And a couple years later, he made The Goodbye Girl. At the time, he was the youngest Academy Award winner for Best Actor. He was 29
Ooh.
When he won the Best Actor for Goodbye Girl, Neil Simon. Then, of course, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Always, another Spielberg film, Mr. Holland's Opus, another nominee. And then recently, he's been playing, you know, he played Bernie Madoff.
Yes.
In the I think it was the ABC production. There were two because De Niro and Dreyfuss, and he was, you know, and he played Dick Cheney before Christian Bale played Dick Cheney. He played Dick Cheney in W, the Oliver Stone movie.
Mm.
So, and then we just talked. Remember last year we were talking about a movie called Asher, where he played a Jewish mobster who kind of reminded you of Hyman Roth from The Godfather.
Right.
So he's, you know, he continues to work, and this is really cool. He's doing this thing, and so far they're going forward with it because this is tomorrow night, not tonight, at the Tivoli Theater. In Downers Grove, he's going to be there in person. They're calling it an evening jawing with Richard Dreyfuss, and he's there talking. They're actually going to screen Jaws, and then you get a chance to, you know, ask questions to Mr. Dreyfuss.
All right, here is Richard Roper with Richard Dreyfuss.
Hello, it's Richard Dreyfuss.
Well, hello, Richard. It's such a thrill to talk to you. We'll get right into it. I know we have a limited amount of time, but I want to get the plugs in right away for folks. This is an evening jawing with Richard Dreyfuss at the Tivoli Theater in beautiful Downers Grove, Illinois. And it's exactly what it sounds like. You get to talk to the Academy Award-winning icon himself, Richard Dreyfuss, VIP meet-and-greet reception, and discussion and a screening of Jaws. For more information, you go to classiccinemas.com. That's the scoop on that. This sounds really cool. How did this all... Is this like a mini tour you're doing, sir?
Yes, in a kind of way. I'm starting to do it all over the country, and this will be my first. And it's specifically not only about Jaws, or I would put a gun in my mouth. So that it's about movies. And my films and things like that. And it can be Jaws and about a lot of others. And over a period of 50 or 60 years, I did about 50 or 60, maybe more, films. And I'm really proud of them.
Hmm.
So even if people didn't see them, that's there too bad. Because they were great.
Well, it is an absolutely tremendous body of work. I mean, you start off with American Graffiti and go through, you know, the great period of the 70s with Jaws and obviously Goodbye Girl and all the way up until now. You know, I just saw Asher, and you were fantastic in that film. You got to play the nicest, most villainous mobster in movie history, pretty much. That must have been a lot of fun to play that kind of evil, even though he was making dinner for his henchmen.
It's actually, I did three films where I played these evil gangster types.
Hmm.
And they were made in Canada for tiny budgets. And it'll be interesting to see because these are the kind of roles I didn't do for a long, long, long time. But one of them is called Louisiana Caviar.
Hmm.
And it's directed by Cuba Gooding Jr.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh,
and the star, and he did great. And then I did another character like that with Asher. And then I did a couple of films in Canada that were shot in blizzards that began after we started shooting the movie.
Uh-huh.
So that we had to factor in turning the terrain 4 feet deep of white snow.
So much for the bicycling scene. You had to throw that out right away. I do want to go back for a little bit and talk about Jaws. Of course, Richard, you know, we all heard the famous stories about, you know, almost no script or an incompleted script and a shark that was not cooperative. What was it like on the set with, you know, you guys were all so young back then. You were in your 20s, you and Steven as well.
Yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, Steven is 2 months younger than me.
The kid.
And I had only met him briefly before, and then he called me and said, I want to talk to you about doing this movie, Jaws. Don't read the book. And I am such a well-trained actor that I have never read the book, even to this day.
Amazing.
When we met, he told me he wanted to make a bullet. And what he meant was no subplots, no nothing. This is about a shark.
Mm.
This whole movie is one bullet. Bang! And that's what he shot. But he had to improvise it because the shark never worked.
Mm.
And the script was not fleshed out. And so we wrote the script every night, sitting at Steven's house with Verna Fields, the editor, and Roy and David Brown and Richard Zanuck. And Richard Zanuck was always there and, you know, would give a go-ahead for things that we hadn't realized. For instance, the whole sequence about the tiger shark that the town catches.
Mm-hmm.
I said to Stephen, we have to prove that this isn't the shark. We can't just say it isn't.
Mm.
And so we had to have scenes like the one where we, you know, go into the shark and the autopsy scene. And the crowds with the woman who slaps Roy.
Mm.
These were scenes that were created during the filming. And Stephen had to realize that he had to reconceive a film about a shark, which he could never show.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to imply it. And watching that experience, for me, was watching a boy become a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I make no bones about it, if there's anyone who's questioning Steven Spielberg's creative brilliance, all they have to do is see Jaws for the first time now and realize that movie could be released right today without one change, and it would make as much money as it did then.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, I showed it to a group of mostly millennials last summer. About half of them had never seen the movie before, and I sat in the last row. And watching them watch it was so entertaining because the moments all still work so well. They're screaming.
Absolutely.
They're squirming. They're, you know, they get those moments of laughter. It's just brilliant. I mean, it was
I used to escort friends of mine. I had this friend in London, and his girlfriend was a high Brahmin, high caste with a purple boop, you know, between her eyes. She was the single most elegant, mm-hmm. graceful aristocrat I'd ever met in my life. And I escorted the two of them to the theater, and then I just hung around until they came out, and she was a dribbling wreck. So satisfying.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear, too, that you're going to be talking about, you know, so many other great roles. I got to ask you, do you think your character from Mr. Holland's Opus is maybe the most beloved character you've ever played? I feel like every kid who was ever in a high school band has memorized that movie and just loves it so much.
I actually agree. I think that I was very, very taken by how deeply that film impacted on so many different cultures within our culture, the deaf and the music and teaching and all of this. About 4 months after the film had opened, I turned on the radio to this national talk show, and they were still talking about the movie, which is not the norm. And the film had just arrived and stayed, and I was incredibly proud of it. And during the making of the film, we literally had 1,000 extras for the audiences and the parents and all this. And those 1,000 extras bonded with the crew in a way that I've never known before or since.
Wow.
There are reunions of people who made that film. And we would shoot these huge scenes, like at the end of the film or when I was doing, you know, conducting the John Lennon piece. And 1,000 people and I just did these scenes maybe 10, 12 times just because we wanted to.
Wow. Well, that really shines through when you see the film. Thank you so much for your time, sir. Really appreciate it.
All right. There is Richard Roper with Richard Dreyfuss. It was very hard to tell the two apart, wasn't it?
He's good, isn't he? Yeah. Dreyfuss, I mean. Not,
not yourself.
Not that Roper guy.
I thought it was interesting how you said you watched millennials watch Jaws, that they had never seen it before, and the way it stands the test of time.
Yeah, it really does hold up. And one of the things we talked about, you know, obviously this is an edited version, but when Spielberg first got the rights to the novel, the famous novel, the producers had read it once, and they said if they'd read it twice, they never would have tried to make a movie out of it, because they realized this whole thing takes place in the water, really, and we don't know how to make a shark.
And you don't see the shark, really. You just
The mechanical shark never really worked. That's the one part of Jaws that's not that scary, is when you see the, you know, like you can almost see the puppeteers from, you know, from Jim Henson, borrowed from him.
Right.
Oh, he's going to bite me. Ooh, scary.
Yeah, he's not really biting. Oh, but although Robert Shaw, that's one of the best film deaths of all times, Robert Shaw.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert: Robert Shaw being eaten by the shark.
Golly.
But it's a movie about so much more.
It really is.
Oh my God! And it's, you know, Roy Scheider. There's not a single movie that Roy Scheider has ever been in that
he had a run there in the 70s. And if you do rewatch the film, one thing to look for: 40% of the film, your eye level is the water level, is the exact level of the water.
Ooh.
40% of the film is shown like from that angle, one way
Spielberg.
Or another.
He knew what he was doing. Even
he made
then.
You feel like the water was right up to your nose.
It did feel that way.
Especially when the lifeguard's leg goes past you.
Here we go.
Yeah. Oh, spoiler alert.
Gosh, we're going to spoil it for everybody.
Turns out that the shark actually ate some people in Jaws.
Boy, that mayor, he just going to keep that place open no matter what.
Well, it's a great commentary about, you know, power and about commerce and all that. It's really something. All right. Hey, great job. Thank you very much for doing that. Appreciate it. All right, look, we've got a major... We announced this last week, but we're going to have a celebratory, congratulatory moment on this program coming up. Don't anybody want to miss this if you're a fan of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. But first, Kim, what's coming up in the news at the top of the hour?
And so, ladies and gentlemen, our hometown hero and the 50th Time Dealer of the Year, the 2019 Time Dealer of the Year, is John Alfirovich.
How about that?
Oh, my God. That's our guy. That is our guy who's in the studio with us right now.
Huge.
John Alfirovich, Alfie, as he's known, or Elfie around Christmas.
Yes.
Who we've been talking about this on the air for the last, I don't know, since you got nominated for this, 3 months maybe? Mm-hmm. It was ago that you were nominated for the Time Dealer of the Year. And people, now you stop and you think about Time Magazine. Time Magazine does three things. That they announce every year. They do the Time Person of the Year. Mm-hmm. They do the 100 most influential Americans, mm-hmm. or influential people in the world, actually. It's Time most influential people in the world. Mm-hmm. And the Time Dealer of the Year, Auto Dealer of the Year. And so you got nominated. There are 16,000 automobile dealerships in America. 51 people got nominated for the Time Dealer of the Year. 51 out of 16,000. And you won the whole thing, and you're our guy. Now, how did that happen, John Alfirovich?
Ro, what an honor, and thanks for having me.
Congratulations, Alfie.
I'm on a cloud. How did it happen? I'm still trying to figure out. You know, time has a vetting process that's pretty intense, and... as soon as I walked off the stage, I was asking them how did it happen to me.
And this is
some tall people on that stage. Really an honor. And it's for, I tell you what, you know, it's just not my honor. I mean, it's the dealership. It's the, you know, the community leaders that I have surrounded behind me. And I tell you what, all the dealers from my dad, his cronies, and it's for everybody. I've been getting calls and congratulations ever since it happened. And 10 minutes after it took place, I had 96 text messages.
Oh, I bet.
Social media it works.
I can, and we should make it clear: this isn't a sales thing. This is about community service. It's one of the coveted awards in the industry, the most coveted awards, like the Oscar of the auto dealer industry.
Right, because it's not, and again, I think that's an important thing. People go, oh, is hold a bunch of cars.
No,
that's not what it is. This is about the impact of this is what, like Time Magazine, like the Person of the Year, it's about impact on the community, impact on the world, impact on what you do.
Right.
And because auto dealers do tend to be, and you think about auto dealerships, as I mentioned, 16,000 of them around the country. And auto dealerships are often the biggest business in any given town.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, in you know, towns like Chicago, you know, there's big multinational corporations. But in the suburbs of Chicago and in the towns throughout Illinois and Wisconsin, and Indiana, the auto dealerships tend to be the community leaders. There's a lot of good jobs that they provide. They provide funding for all kinds of charitable things that happen in the communities. And so what they did is they looked at the impact that these businesses have on the communities in which they operate and the surrounding communities. And they looked at everything that Apple Chevrolet has done, and they deem that the most influential and important dealership in terms of impacting positively the community around it, of the 16,000 in the United States of America. Did you stop to think about that?
The dealers, let's kind of march back a little bit, too. The Chicago area, I was nominated by Dave Sloan, Chicago Auto Trade Association, and since I've been on that board, there has been just this crusade to try to get dealers to be more transparent, get in the communities. And I'll tell you what, I know a lot of phenomenal dealers here in Chicagoland, and that helps, too. We were recognizing, what we do. Just for example, we got the First Look for Charity coming up. We raised $50 million with this charity.
$50 million is raised in one night. It's the black tie event before the auto show starts on a Thursday night. And they have, how many charities are?
18 charities.
18 charities. $50 million split amongst those charities, and it's really important charities too in the Chicago area, and they're specific local charities. It's not like a big national charity.
Great. And as you break it down, we have drives, USO charity drive in July every year, and you're right, the dealers have become more of an anchor in their communities, and they're doing great things, and Apple Chevrolet rose to the top in some perspectives, so
yeah.
we're proud of it.
Well, Alfie, I've got to say, I've known you for a much shorter period of time than Roe, but you can tell it's really in your heart. It isn't, you don't do it for any other reason. And it's so awesome to see, even when we were doing the Toys for Tots collections and how we became the number one collection point for donations in the Chicago area. I mean, a large part because of you, and you got on board and you just, wow, it was awesome the way you and the people over there just put your all into it. And look at the results. I mean, it was really cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, we wouldn't have done that without you. Unfortunately, the place that we did it in had a massive fire. Dirty Nellies is closed down now for at least a short period of time. They're going to
rebuild it.
But you know what? I think it's just because of us. I think it was that they decided that they're going to redo the place so they can have us back. I think that's the
idea. They're going to reopen in 2 weeks a portion of it, and then.
And then they'll be back. We should go back and do a charity concert just for them. But it is an amazing thing because you actually, if we became the number one collection spot for Toys for Tots this year, he had to be number two. Because there were truckloads and truckloads of stuff that you brought up to us
to
make it work. So, and that's the thing. And I just want to say this. I've been doing Toys for Tots for 20 years and doing these collections, using the radio show to do it. And when I got here to GN the first year, I wanted to do what we did this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me three Toys for Tots cycles to be able to finally get a concert and the whole thing that we did here to do it. And in the meantime, Alfie opened up his dealership every one of those years to let me do an event, a collection event, at the dealership every December.
How great.
And we collected thousands upon thousands of toys, every year. And then this year, it's, multiple thousands of toys. I couldn't have done that.
Well, Ro, that credit goes out to our customers. We send out an email blast or something, and we in return we get a great response, and it's getting bigger every year. And we appreciate your voice on the radio. It really helps. It helps us get the word out. And what a great event.
I have to say, this is the funny thing. The first time I was down there, the first time we did this for Toys for Tots 4 years ago or whatever it was, Alfie introduces me to a guy, and he goes, "I just want you to meet this guy. He's bought 32 cars from me."
Oh,
and it was like, what? And it was like a guy cars. He's been a customer for decades, and over the years, he had fleet guys, and he just goes to the dealership and stands there, and he's like buying a car like every day, essentially is what he's doing. It is an amazing. You've created a community around, and it's funny because Alfie and I met each other through another dealership, a dear mutual friend of ours, and it was like one of those. It's amazing to see, and that's why the auto show is as special as it is. The camaraderie between dealers. Obviously, there's some dealers that get mad at each other along the way here, like in any kind of business competitors. But I would say, in the main, the Chicago Automobile Trade Association has done such an amazing job of creating a unified front of making sure that the dealers are taken care of. I think that the Chevy the GM organization here that you know with the unified marketing and the Chevy nameplate people are amazing at making sure that you guys are all sort of selling the brand as a full brand.
That was another feather in our hat. You know, Chicago, unlike any other city in America, Chevrolet has been number one and 8 years going and strong. So,
right now, think about that for a second, because it's a great national brand, but it is not number one in New York. It is not number one in L.A.
No,
right?
Number five, six.
Yeah,
right.
Wow. And between the trucks and the cars and everything that Chevy has, I say this to people all the time that you know, if they're looking for a new car, I don't care what they own. This is not your father's Chevrolet anymore. And there were some great Chevys throughout the years, but the technology on board will beat almost anybody that's in the market.
Absolutely,
right?
And you know, that new Blazer coming out, I think you're going to have an eye on it.
I was going to steal the one off the auto show floor coming up in a couple of weeks. I don't know if people have seen this.
No.
It's built on the lines of the Camaro. I'm a huge Blazer. One of my first vehicles was a Blazer. My daughter's first vehicle was a Blazer. Kevin Powell's first vehicle was a Blazer. It is, you know, it's one of those things, like, if it was in the family, you get it. Right, because it was just this durable,
reliable
product. You could get anything into it, especially if you're like you're going to school, right? And you want to just pack a bunch of stuff in. You had a 7-year-old Blazer that was dad's Blazer, and then it moves down to you, and they last forever,
all weather.
And then they went away, and now they're back. And remember, Michael Jordan made it very, very famous.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of sports stars I recall were driving them.
Yeah. We're going to try to get him back, maybe.
Well, your family was instrumental in Michael Jordan being a part of the Chevy family with the Corvettes and the Blazers.
My wife, who worked for EJ&L at the time, she went out to really literally ask him to sponsor Chevrolet and the Blazer, and boy, it changed the world.
Chevy completely by having him
the image
step into that, right? When American cars, it was the beginning of the resurgence of American cars when Michael Jordan agreed to do the Chevy deal, and it changed everything because Chevy and Ford and Dodge, between the three major American brands and manufacturers, they were getting the pants beat off them by the Japanese,
correct.
And in the luxury market by the Germans, correct. And so what were they going to do? They were getting middled, and then the next thing Chevy leads the way out for America. It was pretty great,
And you look at today, same with you, Michael. Our strategy is using influencers in the city of Chicago.
And I think did you just mention me in the same sentence as Michael Jordan?
Chevy picked some pretty damn good influencers, and that's a credit to Mike Hillstrom, Mike DeMille, and the guys. They do a great job for us, and hats off to the Chevrolet leadership team here in Chicago as well. They provide us with everything, product especially, and great product. And like you mentioned, Ro, there's technology, styling. No one compares.
It's amazing.
Is Ro your most high maintenance client of all?
Just about. My God.
I just wanted to check. Okay, thank you. Time Magazine's most high maintenance client in the automotive industry.
My garage is very small, and Alfie knows that. I was at an awards banquet that he had this summer for his employees, and they gave me an award, which was a side view mirror that they gave me. They go, "You're going to need this.
You need one of those every couple months.
You're
going
to need this in within the next few weeks anyway. So here it is on us. Put it on yourself, pal."
Terrific.
It is it's a great thing. I just, the Chevy dealer group too, I just want to mention them too, because you mentioned Hillstrom and DeMaio and all those guys who make sure that all the Chevy guys are properly managed, marketed and serviced and all of that. I've been honored enough to be with you, your guest, at a number of the Chevy dealers through, Chicagoland Northwest Indiana dealership group. What a fun group of people. I have never had more fun. And I got body surfed at one of these events. I just want to say that. They never did that with Cochran. I don't know. Whatever goes on there. But that was...
We need more dealers.
Yeah, exactly. That was... hey, come on! Get over here! I'm carrying my winter weight. All right. John Alfirovich, congratulations.
Congrats.
Time Dealer of the Year. That is for the United States of America right there. Time Magazine says that John F. Ehrlich and Apple Chevrolet is the most community-minded outreach and responsible dealership when it comes to, you know, taking care of the community around it is, and in America. In America. That's a big deal. Congratulations on that.
Thanks, Ro. Thanks, Anna. All glad right. to be here.
Congrats.
All right. Let's check in with Kim Gordon. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
The Ro Khan Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Ro Khan.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. It's another day of News or Ruse. And we got the kids from Haymarket Brewery.
Yes, we
in
do.
With us right now, who are going to play News or Ruse with us. They're our celebrities. You know, and they are true celebrities, although they we are. Do tend to stretch the
title.
The notion of celebrity sometimes on this program and declare ourselves the actual celebrities. But, you know, whatever we're going to do. All right. Michael, is it Gemma or Gemma?
Gemma.
All right. I just wanted to do that off the air so we knew exactly what was going on. And now here we are on the air. And Michael is Michael Gemma is the director of operations at Haymarket Brewery, which is we have a lot of musical acts in that actually play Haymarket.
Oh, they're incredible.
They are incredible. And Haymarket is a great sneak to go see amazing acts on their way up. It's a beautiful music room that you've got in the back of the restaurant. That is a bar and a music. It's just, it's acoustically perfect, and the bar is gigantic, and you never have to wait for a drink. Isn't that the best part?
It is.
Thank you very much. If you want to play News or Ruse, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We need three contestants right now. I forgot to mention that. All right.
Hurry up, please.
Yes, exactly. And a winner gets a $50 Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. And a $50 gift certificate from Builder Supply Outlet. You might need that after this polar vortex. True might outlet prices every day. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview, now also open in Orland Park. And the runners-up get a desktop indoor weather station, which will scare the bejesus out of you this week, because things like negative 20 show up
don't look at that thing.
You don't
right
want to look
now,
at that.
No.
That's all brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60-Minute Men, call 855-955-HVAC. You're going to need them this week, too. 855-955-HVAC. And over at Haymarket, Sierra Nevada Brewery in Chico, California, and almost 1,000 other craft brewers across America are giving aid to those affected by the wildfires in Northern California, and they have a beer called Resilience IPA. Ooh. And, oh, I must try that, because I'm all about the resilience.
Row strong.
And it's right here. Oh, it's right here. Oh, it happens to be right here. Look at that. What
How
are the
convenient.
Chances? I've just been partying with Alfie, and now I got to party with that. This is going to be.
This is tough work.
Pray for me here at the end of this. They say don't drink during the cold snap. You're going to donate. Listen to this. This is big. They're donating 100% of the proceeds to support the Sierra Nevada Campfire Relief Fund.
How great
is that?
That
is true.
That is really great.
So it's actually up to about 1,500 breweries across the country that are participating in this fundraising effort, which is pretty amazing. And they're projecting, Sierra Nevada is projecting right now, that they're going to be able to raise, with all the different size batches that breweries are making of this particular recipe, over $15 million, which is pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
It's it is what has happened up there, and we forget about all these things. We've forgotten about Puerto Rico, essentially. We're forgetting about what's going on up there. I mean, once they come out of the news cycle, the people, you know, don't pay attention to it, and it's going to take years to rebuild that part of California.
Well, you think about the devastation is returning to nothing, and an entire town pretty much wiped out.
Yeah, the entire town of Paradise pretty much wiped out.
Yeah.
And people still trying to figure out the FEMA trailers and where they're going to be placed and where people are settling in during the rebuild.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. Mexico Beach, Florida, another case of that right from the hurricane. So it's crazy stuff. All right. Okay. Well, this is very... very, very, very important stuff that you're doing. And the IPA is great. Now, who makes this? This is Sierra Nevada?
This is actually ours. So Sierra Nevada came up with a recipe for an IPA, classic West Coast style, and put a call out to the entire brewing community, asked them to brew the same exact recipe at their place, and then put it on tap and donate 100% of the proceeds to the Campfire Relief Fund.
And how many people do you say you got on board in terms of different?
There are over 1,500 breweries.
1,500 breweries.
Wow,
in the United States.
That's amazing. It's great. It's great. So you can go. Any what's happening this weekend at Haymarket? We got. I don't have the. I'm hoping you have the list in front of you. Somebody major. Somebody fun.
Boo Ray. And Nikki Morgan.
Nikki Morgan. Oh, Nikki Morgan. We know Nikki Morgan.
Yeah.
Nikki Morgan is awesome.
She's incredible.
What a voice on Nikki Morgan. Look out.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Thursday, 7:30. Come on by.
It's Boo Ray and Nikki Morgan?
That's true.
Wow. Nikki Morgan got too big for Chicago. Nikki Morgan's like a national act now. Right?
She'll be here.
But she's coming back. But she does. She's coming back to Haymarket. That's what she's doing.
She cares about Chicago and Haymarket.
Nikki Morgan. You will not be disappointed in that. All right, here we go. Let's play some news or ruse. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. We got Carol is playing with Kim. Carol, you there?
Yes, I am.
Mike is playing with Kevin.
I'm here.
All right, Mike.
What's up, Kevin?
And Matt is playing with Michael.
Hello, folks.
Hello.
I think Matt is on the gummy bears. All right, here we go. Let's play.
Hey, it's a snow day.
Let's play News or Ruse. Here we go. Here is your headline, and we're starting with Carol and Kim.
All right, Carol, here we go.
All right, let's go get him, Kim.
Somebody's phone is backing
I'm gonna guess
up
Matt.
On us here.
Matt.
All right. Pablo Escoburger's restaurant draws backlash for name serving hamburger with line of fake cocaine. Carol and Kim.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I think that's possible. What do you think? I think it could be true.
I think it's true.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll now wait, one at a time here. But this is Carol and Kim.
Carol and Kim.
All right. So, Mike and Kevin, you hold on one second. Carol and Kim, you're saying it's true?
We're saying news.
All right.
You got
that
it.
That is correct.
Yay!
Nicely done. Mike and Kevin, here's your headline. Arkansas man admits trying to steal plane to see rap concert.
I don't know. I'm going to say ruse.
All right, I'll go ruse with you.
No, he's flying to Chicago for a rap concert.
Yeah. R. Kelly?
Too soon. Too soon, Kevin Powell. Too soon.
It was not.
All right, here we go. Matt and Michael, here is your headline. Don't get this wrong. Florida mother won't face charges for allowing 11-year-old to play with snakes.
Oh, I know that guy has a pet alligator, a service alligator. I'm going to go with news. What do you think, sir?
I'm going to agree with you there.
Here's the thing about that. Now, that's an impossible one to get right or get wrong because it's Florida, it's snakes, it's an irresponsible mother. How could it not be true?
Right.
But we made that one up. All right, here we go. Back to Carol and Kim.
Carol and Kim, here's your headline. Man threw meth-fueled death party for his wife before she died, deputies say. Man threw meth-fueled death party for his wife before she died.
Well, that's horrible, but I think it's probably news.
I would say news.
That is the darkest headline we have ever.
And where? Right before Valentine's Day.
Really? All right. Mike and Kevin, here's your headline. Whistling while you work does not make work easier, study finds. Whistling while you work does not make work easier.
I love whistling, Mike. I'm a big whistler. But I don't know if it makes me work better. You like whistling? Okay, let's go news.
News.
Damn it!
Gee. Gosh, you guys, get it together, please.
Mike and Kevin, you're out. You're out already.
We had a good run, Mike. Sorry, man.
How did that happen?
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Okay, now, Matt. You gotta get this right. So we can continue on, because I got 10 minutes to go, and I got nothing left to do, all right? All right, Matt and Michael, here you go. Here's your headline.
It is. Netflix asked viewers to stop calling Ted Bundy hot.
Oh, that's true. I saw that. That's got to be true.
Go for it.
Oh, you got it. Well done.
Oh, good. We get to go to the Orion Samuelson round. All right. Hold on, everybody. Don't anybody move. We'll come right back to you on the phones right there. All right. News or Ruse. Very interesting news or Ruse. Kind of dark.
Very dark, today. Yes, I would agree.
Right, and this is a pale ale that we're drinking, and it's kind of dark news. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of an India ale. Which kind of ale?
India pale ale.
India pale ale.
Yes,
I've got the stout, which is quite tasty.
That's
here.
Dark.
Mm-hmm.
That's
dark. The Defender also... American Stout.
Mm.
Well, yeah. Since I'm out, I'm going to come start drinking with
you. Yeah, I think that's what
why
you
not.
Mean.
I'm surprised you're not already join here, us. Kevin.
Right. And Alfie and I already opened up something in the office on the Carnarvon wagon.
Celebratory something. You had to do that.
I mean, Alfie just got Time Magazine Dealer of the Year.
It's
if
amazing.
You don't, if you don't pull out the best whiskey that you have back there, you might as, you know, if you can't do it for that, what are you going
to
do it for?
That's the time to do it.
All right. We will come right back to News or Ruse. We will declare a winner, even if one doesn't win. Don't worry about it. It's all good. But first, Kim tells us what's happening at the top of the hour in the newsroom. All right, News or Ruse continues right here. This is a puff News or Ruse game. People are not tough. Kevin, not tough. Kevin lost before we even got to the second round.
I know, that was
that's
pretty weak.
Crazy that is.
Bad.
Coming up, the stories that matter from David Jennings in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we go back. Here it is the Orion Samuelson round, and we have, let's start with Matt and Michael. Because if Matt and Michael, if you do not get this right, then we don't even get, Kim doesn't even have to be asked a question here. All right? Are you ready?
Let's go, Matt.
All right, so let's go.
Clear snow from windshield while driving. Police implore motorists.
Don't clear snow from windshield while driving.
Unfortunately, this isn't Florida. You know, it's just stupid enough to actually be news because people are stupid. What do you think, Mike?
I'm going to go ruse, but I'll trust your instinct.
All right, because it's a team thing.
Are you famous last words.
All right, you can try that. Okay, that was a good one that you did that. That's very important. All right, here we go. This is Tom Brady. Wait, hold on. I got to set this up. Carol and Kim. Carol and Kim. You know, Orion has to get to bed, so he's moving along. He's got to get up early in the morning. Carol and Kim, here is your headline. This is for the win.
Is Tom Brady a cheater? 10-year-old wins school science fair questioning Patriots quarterback.
That is news.
Oh, man, look at that. Congratulations.
Thanks,
oh, that's
Carol,
big.
You helped me break my losing streak.
Yeah, there you go.
Yay.
You. All right, and you win amazing things. Let me tell you what you have just won. Haymarket. Wait, no, I'm sorry. $50 Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's Home of Chicago's Best Deep Dish Pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. And a $50 gift certificate from Builder Supply Outlet. I hope you don't necessarily need that after this weekend, but you can always use it for anything. True outlet prices every day. Check out the Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview, now also open in Orland Park. And everybody gets a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. And we want to thank Haymarket for being here, because Haymarket is one of the best music joints.
Oh, they are.
It's a great restaurant, but it's also one of the best music joints in Chicago, if not America. So,
thank
Michael,
you very
it's
much.
A great
congratulations
vibe in
there.
Come check us out.
Yeah, it is. It's the best. It's right down. It's in that
Randolph, zone of like everything.
Randolph Corridor. It's right at Randolph and Halstead. I don't think you can miss it.